The approach the Hong Kong government and the Chinese mainland government are taking is wrong.
Protesters reached the 100-day mark in Hong Kong. It's Monday, September 16th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us as well on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, a push for a fourth North Korean summit. The Taliban allow resumption of humanitarian work. U.S. coal use declines. Farm costs rise. And sunken ships form a new marine sanctuary. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Anti-government protesters clashed with police in Hong Kong again Sunday, with demonstrators hurling rocks and Molotov cocktails at authorities who responded with volleys of tear gas and blasts of blue-dyed water fired from water cannons. Some of the thousands of protesters threw bricks at police outside the Chinese People's Liberation Army base and tore down and set fire to a banner proclaiming the 70th anniversary of the October 1st founding of the People's Republic of China. Some of the protesters engaged in cat-and-mouse skirmishes with police, setting street fires and blocking roads in the heart of the city. It was the 99th day of the summer-long protests aimed at promoting democracy in the Chinese territory. The demonstrations originally started as protests against a bill that would have allowed the extradition of criminal suspects to mainland China to stand trial. That measure has now been withdrawn, but the protests have continued in opposition to what demonstrators see as Beijing's interference in the oversight of Hong Kong, despite promises of autonomy, as spelled out when Britain returned Hong Kong to Chinese control in 1997. The protesters want universal suffrage and investigations into what they see as police misconduct in controlling the demonstrations. Events in Hong Kong have had a behind-the-scenes impact as trade negotiators work on details of a new deal between the United States and China. Washington State and the upper northwestern corner of the United States is heavily dependent on trade. VOA's Adriana Zhang was there recently and spoke with a member of Congress for his thoughts on the trade war, Democrat Representative Rick Larson.
I think it's a disaster for China. I think as someone who supports democracy and human rights, that the approach the Hong Kong government and the Chinese mainland government are taking is wrong. This recent round of demonstrations cropped up because of the Lam administration's refusal to take the extradition bill totally off the table. They have only really postponed the consideration of the extradition bill. They have not committed to taking it totally off the table. And this extradition bill makes people in Hong Kong worried that the Chinese government and the Hong Kong government may use the extradition bill to send demonstrators, political activists who are vocal against the Hong Kong government to China to extradite them for made-up crimes. And I believe they have every right to be worried. So I really think that the United States needs to make strong statements for democracy, for human rights, for rule of law, and support the goals of the demonstrators. Not every demand the demonstrators are making. I don't want to comment on those, but I think that the goals of the demonstrators, so that there's transparency in the Hong Kong government, there's adherence to the rule of law, and there's a commitment that the vibrant voices that had existed in Hong Kong can continue to exist. Whether or not that's comfortable for the Hong Kong government should be irrelevant. They've handled this poorly, I think, and will continue to handle it poorly. And I think the Chinese government, the mainland government, will handle it poorly because they handle these things poorly all the time.
Mm-hmm. So are you satisfied with this administration's response to the protests?
No, I think the Trump administration's response has been vastly underwhelming. But it goes deeper than that, because the idea of democracy and human rights is something that this administration has left on the table. They have not been vocally supportive of democracy movements, of human rights, as part of our foreign policy. Doing so does not preclude trade with China. Doing so does not preclude cooperating or otherwise criticizing things that we believe we should criticize from a foreign policy perspective. But something in the president's mind has convinced him that if he mentions support for democracy and human rights, that President Xi won't like him or won't talk to him anymore. Well, I don't know what the president has to lose. You know, our U.S.-China relations aren't going that great right now. We have to take responsibility for the parts that aren't going well from our perspective. So I think our response has been vastly underwhelming.
So what do you hope for the future of the U.S.-China relations, especially with the, you know, trade war intensifying and the current situation in Hong Kong? Do you think there's still room to cooperate?
Yeah, look, I think the two largest economies in the world are stuck with each other. And we're not going to tear ourselves away from each other, even if we wanted to. We won't, because we can't. So we need to find a new accommodation that recognizes the areas where we compete and recognizes the areas where we must cooperate. That is what the two largest economies in the world need to do right now.
Democrat Congressman Rick Larson from Washington State, speaking with VOA Asia's Adriana Zhang. More trade talks are set for next month in Washington. These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find when you make a visit right now to voanews.com. Hong Kong demonstrators clash with police on 99th day of protests. With new North Korea-U.S. talks likely, will a deal result? U.S. imposes sanctions on North Korean hacking groups blamed for global attacks. Tennis and musical are latest events postponed in Hong Kong. Canada sends warships through sensitive Taiwan Strait. Expanded coverage of all these stories and so much more can be found daily on Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as the voanews.com website. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You're listening to VOA Asia. U.S. President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un have already met three times since last June. Trump says round four could happen soon. But Korea watchers are more focused on long-delayed working-level talks, as VOA's William Gallo reports from Seoul.
Donald Trump says he may hold a fourth meeting with Kim Jong-un by the end of the year.
Certainly they want to meet. They'd like to meet. I think it's something that will happen.
North Korea has already offered working-level talks by the end of the month, raising hopes of a more substantive phase of negotiations. The departure of Trump's hawkish national security advisor, John Bolton, may help, says former U.S. official Dennis Wilder.
I think that the North Koreans will be happy to see John Bolton no longer as part of the president's team. John Bolton clearly never was on board with the president's policies on Korea.
Bolton famously referred to the Libya model for North Korea's denuclearization, an unnerving image as Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi was killed by U.S.-backed rebels after giving up his nuclear program.
You just take a look at what happened with Gaddafi. That was not a good statement to make, and it set us back.
The end of Muammar Gaddafi was one of the ugliest moments sort of in a leader's history, the way he died, the humiliation. To say that we're going to basically handle North Korea the way we handled Gaddafi, I would think would be pretty offensive to the North Koreans.
But despite Bolton's departure, North Korea isn't likely to make the talks easy. This week, the North conducted its 10th round of short-range missile launches since May, keeping up pressure on the U.S.
Provocations like the missile launches are not helpful, and that we want the North Koreans to return to negotiations to achieve denuclearization.
If talks do eventually restart, their format will be crucial and will need to involve nuclear experts and seasoned diplomats knowledgeable about the region. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
Happening now in Asia, Thailand's post-junta government is fending off a series of challenges to its very existence, including a brewing political storm over the cabinet's failure to recite the full oath of office. Analysts expect the country's courts to save Prime Minister Prayut Chan-o-cha's two-month-old administration from collapse. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to be starting out a brand new week with you on VOA Asia. The Afghan Taliban Sunday revoked their ban on the International Committee of the Red Cross and restored its guarantee for the security of ICRC staff doing humanitarian work in Afghanistan. An ICRC spokesman said the same day the organization's operations had resumed across the country. In April, the Taliban imposed a ban on the ICRC and the World Health Organization, alleging the two organizations were conducting suspicious activities connected with their vaccination campaigns. The WHO has been carrying out a polio vaccination campaign in Afghanistan, one of the last countries in the world where the disease is endemic. The Taliban control of more than half of Afghanistan's 410 districts. Meanwhile, NATO is hoping to provide stability in Afghanistan after long-anticipated peace talks with the Taliban fell apart. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb has more from the Slovenian capital, where NATO's military chiefs have gathered.
It's been a rocky week in Afghanistan peace talks after a car bombing in Kabul killed a dozen people, including an American soldier. U.S. President Donald Trump canceled secret talks with the Afghan president and the Taliban.
They're dead. They're dead. As far as I'm concerned, they're dead.
Days later, the Taliban held talks in Moscow, telling Russian media it could continue talks with Washington but was prepared to fight 100 years. NATO military leaders sought to calm Afghan concerns at a meeting of military chiefs in Slovenia this weekend.
There has been a lot of drama associated with Afghanistan, and at this very moment, the signal that we send to our NATO partners is the U.S. is committed, NATO is committed, and the mission still remains.
And the chairman of NATO's military chiefs said that commitment is unanimous.
There is no division on that subject. The allies are absolutely firm and united and have reaffirmed their commitment to the Afghan mission today.
With Afghan presidential elections just 2 weeks away, NATO's operations commander said increased violence is expected.
The elections probably won't be perfect, but we're going to plan and execute to the ends of the earth to make sure we can find ways to make sure that they are the safest, most secure elections possible.
And incumbent President Ashraf Ghani is saying future peace talks with the Taliban won't happen until the insurgents declare a ceasefire. Carla Babb, VOA News, Ljubljana, Slovenia.
Coming up, stalling the decline of U.S. coal. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia, Joshua Wong, one of the most visible leaders of the Hong Kong protest movement, has arrived in the United States. Wong, who has been permitted to travel internationally while on bail, is speaking with legislators, human rights advocates, and students in New York and Washington. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for this and many more stories. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, coal has powered progress since the Industrial Revolution. While coal-fired power is on the rise in Asia, it's declining in the United States and much of Europe as cheaper alternatives and climate concerns push it out of the market. While the fall has hit coal towns hard in the Appalachian region of the eastern United States, the western state of Wyoming is the nation's leading coal producer. And now coal's troubles have arrived in this energy-rich state, as we hear from VOA's Steve Barragona.
You'll find two kinds of fossils in the Wyoming town of Kemmerer. City Councilman Robert Bowen sells one kind at his fossil shop downtown.
That's one of the fun things about some of the fossils is they tell stories. You know, like this guy right here where you can see the bite mark.
The other kind is fossil fuel. A coal mine feeds the Naughton power plant just outside town.
It's huge for us for, you know, as far as our economy. The power plant, the coal mine, provide a lot of jobs here.
Wyoming is the nation's leading coal producer, but the energy industry is changing. Dana Ralston heads coal, natural gas, and geothermal plants at Pacific Corp, which owns Naughton. He says coal is more expensive now than gas-fired electricity. And renewables, like wind and solar, are moving in.
You know, renewables have grown year after year after year, and they're a cheaper alternative from a market perspective than a coal plant.
Late last year, Pacific Corp announced that closing the plant ahead of its schedule would save customers money. Wyoming has not embraced the energy transition. The state's residents have the nation's lowest rate of acceptance that humans are causing climate change. And University of Wyoming economist Robert Godby says that state officials have not prepared for the changing market.
We've been late to the game. We have been reticent or maybe just slow, or maybe we've denied the changes that are going on. And so we've been slow to react to them. We haven't been proactive. We've been reactive.
We understand that a change is coming, but we're simply asking that let's do it with some wisdom. Let's not put the plane into a nosedive. Let's let it glide down easy and sort this out.
Dan Dockstetter is a Wyoming state senator. A new law that Dockstetter sponsored puts a wrinkle in Pacific Corp's plans. It requires the company to look for a buyer before closing the plant. Godby calls it a speed bump.
If the current owner of a coal-fired power plant can't make money with that plant, why would somebody else buy it? But on the other side of the coin, the devil's in the details.
Godby says the details are still being written, but the state may structure the deal to raise the costs for Pacific Corp.
With that uncertainty, firms hate uncertainty, maybe they'll look at other states and close those power plants first.
Robert Bowen says the new law will help the town of Kemmerer buy time, but trouble is ahead.
It's not if, it's when. To prevent some of that, we need to start looking at diversifying our economy here. One of the things that we could be pushing a lot harder is paleotourism with fossil fish that we dig here, which is something that's very unique to this area.
Bowen says fossil tourism alone won't save the town, but it would help.
You get the scales and bones on both sides.
Like the creatures entombed in stone here, Kemmerer must adapt or go extinct. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Kemmerer, Wyoming.
This news from VOA Asia. China says it is lifting tariffs on U.S. soybeans, pork, and some other farm goods, in yet another sign of easing tensions between the two countries ahead of trade talks scheduled for next month. China already was looking into purchasing U.S. agricultural goods, such as pork and soybeans. You'll find all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, increased cost for aluminum and steel and lower prices for crops, mostly attributable to tariffs, are forcing many American farmers to hold off purchasing large and expensive equipment. VOA's Kane Faribault reports from this year's Farm Progress Show in Decatur, Illinois, where farmers want new equipment that utilizes the latest technology, but are struggling to afford it and encountering obstacles in getting loans from banks.
In the world of agriculture, there is often a dividing line marked by color, red and green, which, on the farm, isn't stop or go.
Just like you might be accustomed to Ford or Chevy, on the farm it's Case or John Deere.
For Illinois farmer Megan Dwyer's family, their choice is the red Case IH tractors.
165, yeah.
Even though they live near the Moline headquarters of the manufacturer of the iconic green equipment of John Deere.
We bleed red and have red on the farm. That's all I've ever known.
Some of the Case machinery Dwyer's family purchased in the 1970s is older than she is and still in use today. She admits they could use new equipment, but being able to afford it is another matter.
There's not really money there to do it. We're operating at a loss right now.
Farmers in America face their fifth consecutive year of below average income. Retaliatory tariffs placed on exported U.S. crops continue to cut into farmers' overall profits, while U.S. tariffs on imported aluminum and steel have increased the cost to manufacture farm equipment in the United States, like tractors and combines. Dwyer says the current economic environment doesn't leave room to spend big on new equipment.
They're luxuries today. Lenders, bankers, they want to see something that's profitable and makes sense, and some of these big equipment purchases don't do that.
John Deere has cut its earnings forecast several times this year. The company says it is looking to cut costs and will decrease production at its Illinois and Iowa facilities, mostly of large tractors, by 20%.
We're always taking a pulse of what the customers are feeling, their pinch points, and we're trying to address that as best we can with our equipment and the technology.
John Deere says there are other options for farmers reluctant to make big equipment purchases as the trade war marches on.
But we also offer a lot of performance upgrades. So if you can't or don't want to get a new piece of equipment, we have that opportunity to upgrade what you have to still be able to use that technology.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture reports the nation's farm sector is over $426 billion in debt. According to the American Farm Bureau Federation, farm bankruptcies are on the rise in most parts of the U.S., with delinquencies on commercial agricultural loans at six-year highs. While technology upgrades might not be as expensive as new equipment purchases, it is still a cost, and many farmers might need to finance such purchases.
I think there are more important things to be putting my money to on the farm today.
Which is why Dwyer says she'll stick with repairing her Red Case tractors, regardless of their age, until she sees a break in the trade storm that continues to erode her profits and cast clouds on the overall farm economy. Kane Fairbaugh, VOA News, Decatur, Illinois.
A watery grave of old sunken ships has been designated the newest national marine sanctuary in the United States. Located in Maryland, about 60 kilometers south of Washington, the ghost fleet rises like an apparition out of the water when the tide is low. VOA's Deborah Block takes us to this underwater park with ships going back more than 100 years.
This is Mallows Bay on the Potomac River near Nanjemoy, Maryland. The first national marine sanctuary in the U.S. to protect historic, partially submerged vessels.
It contains over 200 ships that were sunk here. And when the tide goes out, the ships come up, and so they've been called the Ghost Fleet.
From the shore, you can see this rusty ferry hull abandoned in the 1970s. But the best way to look at other ships is by kayaking during low tide to see the main attraction. The skeletal wooden remains of American World War I naval vessels, hastily built about a century ago.
And they built 100 of these large wooden steamships. The only problem was they were finished after the war was completed. So they were brought here and they were sold to a salvage company.
A few years after the war ended in 1918, these obsolete cargo ships were broken down and destroyed in the relatively shallow waters of the small bay.
And that piece of stone sticking out there was originally in the bottom of the ship, and it was balancing the ship.
About 80 meters long, these vessels joined even older boats that were scuttled in the 17 and 1800s.
Now, if you look at an aerial photograph of this area, you can see just one ship after another next to each other, creating this intricate array of reefs.
Today, they serve as a man-made wildlife sanctuary for fish, waterfowl, and other animals.
We notice a lot of them are like floating flower pots. They're full of vegetation, and it's tremendous for the environment. They're actually cleaning the water. They're providing habitat. They're actually helping with climate change.
The slowly rotting wood does not harm the environment.
Because it's underwater, it doesn't receive as much oxygen, and so the decay rate is a lot slower. It's also salt water, which further reduces the rate of decay.
Mallows Bay contains the largest number of shipwrecks in the Western Hemisphere. Although dead in the water, the bay houses the world's biggest collection of World War I ships.
This is the only place you can see the size of these vessels and the size of the collection and the fact that they are a cross-section of a different number of designs. It is like one big museum.
A historic display with an ecological benefit. Deborah Block, VOA News, Nanjemoy, Maryland.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us on iTunes and SoundCloud. You'll find us streaming on VOA Asia Facebook, as well as our website, voanews.com. And you'll find us on the radio throughout Asia, like Radioactive at Temasek Polytechnic in Singapore. We thank everyone there who's tuned into our program today. We also like to thank our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Carl Starling, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Keith Lane, Kelly Jean Kelly, And we thank Michelle Liu for streaming our program today on Facebook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day.